Do you think about making dynasty trades even while watching football games?
Are you thinking of player values when you should be thinking of family values? Then you may have a trading problem.
Don't worry, you're not alone. I am Dynasty Outhouse and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Brian Haar and I also have a trading problem.
Join us for the Trade Addicts podcast where you can be with like-minded people and talk about everything in the NFL in the context of dynasty trade values.
News and notes, make amends, keep trade buys, all these things we will cover every week.
And don't forget Trade Addicts trades.
So when you're done listening to this fine DLF family podcast, please tune in to the Trade Addicts podcast.
Thank you and enjoy your podcast.
Do you have the time to listen to me grind? Take down the film watchers and nerds all at once. With the math's not adding up, you better check it out. I'm a pile, welcome to the ground.
Hello and welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard, at PA Howdy on Twitter. This is a member of the DLF family of podcasts. Dang it, nearly got it there. And other stuff. So, this is part four of my conversation with Zach Reed, and I was wrong. There is easily another two full episodes of stuff in this section, and I'm tired. I am going to bed after finishing this. So this will conclude the epic series that is me talking to Zach Reed this year about everything fantasy football, unless I find it in myself to produce a Jalen Hurts episode, because Zach Reed had some really interesting things to say about Jalen Hurts. I am tired, people. I am going to bed. There is no editing Pete at the end of this one. That there's just however this conversation ended. I really hope you enjoyed it. I had a blast. Thanks to Zach. Thanks to all of you for sticking through. And I hope you enjoy this last little sliver of the honest conversation I had with Zach. Appreciate it. What's it about? Everything else we haven't talked about yet, including which rookies are impressing us the most this season, towards the very end. Yeah. All right. Thanks again. I don't have a building process because my entire thing is rotating rosters as well and better than I can, getting into the first tier as often as I can with, like we were just talking about. So there really should never be a need to blow it up. Like, players right. underperform in a season, but I mean, just your roster doesn't ideally look like this. I went a little crazy. It was Trade Addicts. I was like, I need to learn how to trade. And it turns out you can learn a lot about how not to trade. So, like, I've got Rashad Bateman. I've said Moss out for a third, I guess. Everyone knows I'm desperate. They're not going to give me a second. And Gaskin. You can't build for the draft. That's one of the quickest things I learned when I started playing Dynasty instead of redraft. Like, too many people think, well, I'll get bottom, I get a better pick, I'll draft Derrick Henry, I'll be good. You can't build for the draft. All you can do is build to get more. That's where value comes into play, if you know what I mean. If you hit bottom and you're bottom, and I didn't know if you had more thoughts about that, because I've got this league sitting here staring at me in the face. I'm like, I don't build traditionally. But I do know, I've seen way too many teams continually play their league dues without realizing there are three good teams in that league, and they are going to keep you down unless you go all out. You can't get a good player next year and then add him to your roster and then get a good player the next year or two, because you got a second round pick that worked out. Yeah, if you get a good player, you got to trade him. You kind of, you almost throw it.
Well, so this is
you got to flip.
This is the way. So, how I have traditionally approached, I mean, that, although not necessarily not having any assets, but having few assets, is because there's this weird phenomenon where people don't, or traditionally haven't. Now we get Devy, so things are, we're picking up. People are getting smarter. It's making this a lot harder. But before, You used to be able to identify a draft class a couple years out.
Right.
And then try to get, because people devalue a pick 2 years out. So, like, It was always when I first started playing Dynasty, you listen to DLF and it was Carl Savchek and somebody else. I can't remember who else it was, but there was the DLF, like the flagship DLF podcast. And they would always talk about a first round pick 2 years out is worth a second.
Yeah.
Now
that's the way that's the way I think of it in my head. Like, but first this year.
Yeah. But if you're trying to rebuild and you don't have anything and people are valuing a first in 2 years like a second, and you can trade a player who's worth a second and get a first, and you identify that class and you can get multiple shots at. So I did this, and I'd have to go back and listen to the show we did. But Kyle and I did a show back. It was 2015. And I'd identify the 2017 class as being, you know, kind of a bull of the woods class. And so I had traded a player two players who are worth seconds for a second in the next draft class and a first in the draft class after. And so I did that like three different times. So by the time I was done, I had five picks in the top seven of the 2017 class, which had Christian McCaffrey, it had Leonard Fournette, it had Kareem Hunt, it was a draft class that I was interested in. And then because one of them was the 101 and everybody was after Corey Davis, I could trade that pick for another pick and another first. So I traded the 101 for a later first and a first in the next year's class. Luckily, that first became Saquon Barkley. And so then you have a team where you've got McCaffrey, Barkley. And so in 2 years, I went from being the worst team in the league to winning two championships in a row to being in another one last year and being one of the top scoring teams and being in third right now. Like, it's that's how I... Like, my skill set is rookies. My skill set is building through the draft and being able to identify a draft class. And so, like, the 2023 class, we were talking about that last year as being the one that you want to attack if you can. Now people are a lot sharper. They're listening to Devy people. They're listening to Ray Garvin talk about Bijan Robinson and, like, all of this stuff. So it's harder. But that is one way, that is my way, that is the way that I am most comfortable and most successful to build. It's not the only way. I mean, if you talk to Russ, Russ would say, no, you just trade this guy and 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 this guy, and you make 50 trades. And if you win 50 trades by like half a point, all of a sudden you've made 25 points, and you know, and you keep doing that and you get better. I'm not good enough at that. So the way I do it is I'll lose value in a trade because I'm trading for a first that's 2 years out. So I've got to wait. So I lose that entire year of production. But I gain, when we get to 2023, I gain that value back, you know, tenfold, because Bijan Robinson is going to be worth way more than any guy that was worth a second that I traded to get that. And the other players in that draft class are going to be worth more. And so that, like, that's how I attack. It's certainly not the only way. I mean,
I will say in this league, I've got two 2023 picks, and that's because I was trading for them last year. Like, this team was bad last year. Yeah. I'd say the difference now is you almost have to extend it an extra year.
Right. And but that's why it's important to be paying attention to, because not everybody's listening to Debbie, not everybody's paying attention to a draft class 2 years out or 3 years out. Like, if you can identify them early and say, okay, my team is bad, I fully accept the fact that my team is bad, I am going to make this play, that's another way to make a big swing.
All right. Here's where my head's at. I guess this is a section we need to drop. building a roster, roster, roster. There you go. I did drop. That was professional. I just dropped that one in. Like in this league, there are two of us that all play win record is 10. That's real bad if you've never looked at all play win record. But everyone else is decent, you know, 59 to 22 or so. But if you look at the trade bait, everyone's trading for the future. That's the other thing with Dynasty. Like we started out this thing 3 hours ago. Like everyone's more interested in value than points. And my mind immediately goes to, it would almost be easier for me to try to build a win now team.
Yeah.
It feels like, having said that, when you go and offer them value players for points players, everyone's suddenly a little more hesitant. You have to throw picks at it. And after trading literally everything I can away, I've got two first-round picks. I traded all my picks away. And now I've got, like, multiple thirds and seconds and two first-round picks in 2 years. That's all I was able to acquire. So, but I'd have to throw them away to do it. But that was honestly when I was thinking about building, or even just trades in general in a league. It's like, because everyone in a dynasty league is almost always orientated towards the future a little bit more than I think necessary. It's almost always easier, or at least people are saying on their trade bait when you send them off, is like, nah, I want a young player. I want a first round pick. I want a second round pick. I don't know if that's true. But if everyone's saying 70% of the truth, it's almost easier to go out and trade for win now players. Yeah. So is that what I want to do? But no, it's too far into this season, right? I can't go trade for Calvin Ridley, Mike Davis, who's win now and low value right now. Keenan Allen, who I already mentioned. Henderson and James Robinson, right?
Yeah.
I don't know I can make the finals from this point on, but I don't know if I have a skill set, but it is that I do seem to come at things sideways and looking at the difficulties in trading and the low value of my players. The first one was I love a lot of those players I just mentioned. I think this team has some really good players on it. The first thought was I just have to forget that I like these players and that no longer matters because I have to flip this drastically. Instead of just churning a roster, I have to change it. And so that's the first thing to go. And the next thing to do was looking at the trade bait. And even like the 5-1 teams are like, I'm looking for picks. It's like the 5-1. So that was my next thought. It's like, maybe I should trade more for older players, like I tend to want to do anyway, that I'm shorter term. Is that crazy?
No, but because I think that's, again, that's part of evaluating. So we're now down into the nitty gritty, like in this league, right?
Right.
And oh, this yeah, league,
that's the thing about, that's why I thought it was interesting to do. Like we're several years in and there's a lot of stuff that happens at that point. You've got tiredness, you've got people, the league gets a little more slack, and you've got dominant teams and bottom teams, and that's a very different, like it's hard for a bottom team to ever raise up when it's a true bottom team like mine is, to be honest. And like, because what we were talking about, there's no value in those teams at the top actually making a fair value trade. It's like, no, you stay down there, it's fine. I have a better win percentage by not making a good trade for myself and keeping you down there. I don't think anyone's thinking about it that maliciously, but I think it's one of the ways it works. You know, something John Bosch mentioned when I was complaining and moaning about people not wanting to trade with me because I'm a little weakling, was one of the things that's happening right now is you have a smaller market because there are only a few teams that are really interested in pushing because they think their team's pretty good. Those in the middle might get the players, they might win, but they don't really see any value in giving up value, like we were saying. They can play the middle because they're in the middle a bit more. And yeah, the one team I'm in the middle on, I'm like, let's sell everything to win. And I do think that, yeah, I'm going to try that. He said there are fewer teams who would be interested and therefore it's a smaller market. And I think he says absolutely right. That's one of the things going on. But I think if that was one of the motivating factors, it wouldn't be a lack of interest. It would be low interest.
Right. And
like, so some things are, but it was a really interesting point that by week 5, there's a smaller trade market for anyone that you happen to have. And that should be one of the reasons that affects why Daryl Henderson doesn't have as much value, because they know you've only got three teams you can really trade him to.
But that should also drive the price. So there are only three teams, but the three teams should want him more. You know what I mean? Like,
That's my hypothesis, that they should be more motivated. But then, not, it ends up just being not.
Well, and that's the trick. That's the tricky thing where sometimes game theory breaks down, because, or maybe where game theory comes into play, because not everybody is playing the game rationally. Like that's the thing. So like Bosch is hyper rational, like doesn't care about any players. He wants like the player doesn't matter. If he's in a position where he needs points, the points matter. If he's in a position where he wants to tank, only the value matters. But not everybody plays that way. And so I think that's where psychology and game theory and that sort of thing comes into play, because now instead of playing the high level like dynasty, again, looking at DLF's ADP or whatever, you're now in this league where, okay, nobody wants to trade for anything but picks. So maybe you can find players that you've got seconds and thirds. Maybe you can find players that you think are worth more than a second. Because to me, I don't care about a second round pick. I don't care about a third
round pick. That's the other thing that ends up happening in these conversations when I try to figure out the reality versus the game theory, essentially.
Right.
That's what John Bosch is talking about. He's right that should be the reason, but I'm like, but it's not. And I'm not trying to, I'm not having a difficulty understanding the reality. I'm trying to tilt over the fact that that shouldn't be the reality. Like, right. if talking about rationality. But, where are we? They say they want youth and picks. I don't know people want things that they... There's a difference between saying, I want youth and picks, and then you're like, but I can't trade Saquon Barkley for that. It's right. Like, that's youth and picks, dude. Yeah. Like, what have I mean? I don't know where it's going with that. But I do think it's in... Like, I can't break down this entire league, but I do think... I don't know. I might try it that way. Like, Darren Waller's underperforming, but he's more of a win-now asset if I send Rashad Bateman, and he's on the trade block with the note youth and picks. So if I send Rashad Bateman plus something for Darren Waller, that's definitely not a value. That's not thinking like future value. I'm not trading for picks.
Right, that's
I'm not
win
trading
now.
For
that's,
youth.
Yeah.
But, like, Darren Waller's not going anywhere next year, right?
I don't think so.
Or the year after that. So, but, like, you see what I mean? I'm trying to reverse it, but target the right players. But I do think if I send that off, it would be like, no, I'm trying to win, dude. I'm 4-2. But I'm like, take him off the trade bait. But I guess I could find out. And that would be, again, he's perfectly right to think that. And it's difficult to figure out. Like you said, you've got reality, you've got people's actual personalities, you've got what they think they want to do and then what they actually would be willing to do.
Yeah.
And this isn't like I have to be the rational one. I'm the same way, I assume. Like I've said many times, I would do that. Then I've gotten the offer in my inbox and like, oh, I don't know about that.
And I think also, especially in a league that's as active, and I assume that since it's a Rust league, you have a pretty active chat. Like, there's also the, like, what if I screw this up? And, like, all of these people, like, you know what I mean? So, like, so maybe they would make that trade, but it's easier to not, because not making that trade, you didn't screw anything up. It's just bad luck. It's whatever your players did. But if you actively make a trade, now... That's on you. I mean, you made that trade, man. So,
yeah, And to be clear, just because I'm not sure I laid it out, Darren Waller isn't old. It's not an age thing.
No.
It's typically when you're trying to build, as I understand it, and I listen to many people, like and all of us listen, everyone's got a How to Build podcast except me, I think, an article. And it's more about getting more. So when you're trying to win, you're trying to get single players. Like you want to roll things into one player to
consolidate.
You're much more of a knife edge. If they fail, if they get hurt, you're dead. But you're hopefully getting more points and more immediate value. Whereas when you're trying to build, or the way it occurs to me, you're trying to split things up. I'll trade Rashad Bateman into a first, a second, and KJ Osborne, whatever. Mm-hmm. Because you're trying to throw as many dice as you can. Sorry, you're getting tired. And the reason you don't want to do that is the same thing I said about those rookie picks. If you get the 101 and you draft Saquon Barkley or that great running back, you have to trade him. Because having one thing isn't enough to make your team great, and so you have to re-roll it. And that's the problem with building. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I think having one great player is you just got to trade him. I could be wrong about that.
It depends on, honestly, it depends on the player. Like having Saquon Barkley changed your team for a year. Having Christian McCaffrey changed your team for a year. Like
That's what I mean, though. Does it if you've got Christian McCaffrey, let's go for something this year so we can all actually relate to it, because I can't remember who was scoring points that year, apart from Christian McCaffrey. So this year, if you've got Najee Harris, he's top three in the league or whatever, and imagine he's Christian. But that's everyone likes him. But your wide receivers are Juju, Odell Beckham, and who else do I roster in this league? And Rashad Bateman. It's like, yeah, but it definitely didn't change my team.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But it.
So then I've got aging running back who might get injured next year. And then my wide receivers turn around. So that's where my head's at.
Right.
So trade him now because you're not ready to win now.
If you have a team where like you only have a running back, yes, the answer is trade him but that's again ideally when you build, at least for me, I try to put my wide receivers in place and then attack, you know, a draft class with running backs and add those back. So like the wide receivers that I had in place when I drafted McCaffrey and when I drafted were pretty good. I mean, I had Amari Cooper and it was a while ago. It was 4 years ago now. So I'd have to go back and look, and it doesn't really matter, but like I had a pretty good wide receiving core. And then to put myself over the top, you talk about making trades. So Dalvin Cook was one of the players that I drafted in that class. So McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Saquon in the next class, Leonard Fournette. So in order, because Dalvin Cook was injured, in order to cement winning a championship with that team, mm-hmm. I traded Dalvin Cook and Amari Cooper, which is an overpay, to get Ezekiel Elliott. But Ezekiel Elliott at that point was playing at such a level that I ended up winning two in a row. Even winning one, that's worth it.
No, you're right. I like to simplify into extreme just because I can't handle more than one thing. Like I just want one list with five players on it, okay? Don't give me like I was doing with my own list. And actually, that philosophy permeates everything. I was talking about that with someone else. So I do try and simplify into extremes. And you're right. I mean, there's no need to trade. If you only have one good asset, you don't have to trade them away necessarily, especially since hopefully you're trying to add other good assets other ways, getting an undrafted free agent or finding a second round pick that works out. But I just think that's a path everyone's trying to walk, like build through the draft and draft the right second round pick. And I often find value in going, okay, I'm going to go upstream. And so,
for sure.
And that's what I'm kind of looking at, like instead of so simplifying building upstream would be trade multiple Bateman and a first into a more right now player, because I think I'd find the swimming easier. It's like get your wide receivers in play. That makes sense until Like in a dynasty league, it's been going for a few years. Everyone in this league is incredibly smart, incredibly good at dynasty. No question. In my mind. So, but I think, and I think I've experienced all of them doing it at different points, like they don't want to trade wide receivers. Like the Darrell Henderson thing, they want dynasty, everyone knows wide receivers have value, they play longer, and so it's actually, it's harder to get them in place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I do.
If I went with this team, like I've got Rashad Bateman, all right, I'll go get Jamar Chase. It's not happening. I would have to package so many players together that it would just look like a package deal and they're rejected outright. I could send them 2 first-round picks and a Rashad Bateman. That probably sounds like a great trade for Jamar Chase. I don't think anyone's doing it because it's Jamar Chase in a dynasty league. Right. They would do that. Actually, 2 first-round picks and Rashad Bateman, that actually might get Jamar Chase.
But then what do you do with Jamar Chase once you have him?
That's what I was saying about having one good player doesn't work. And but so if you're trying to get wide receivers in place.
That's where you attack your league who says old players don't matter. Like, or I mean, that's
like, the thing. No one in this league's got like no one in this league thinks DeAndre Hopkins does. They just know that his value is decreasing.
Right.
Like again, you know everyone in this league. It's got Russ, it's got Bobby, it's got it's got Casey, it's got Riley, but you know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't think they're gonna be like, oh, Keenan Allen's terrible. I'll give him away for a second. You're not gonna get any too easy trades. So upstream would be what? I mean, I actually don't know. I'm just spitballing. Help me. This isn't a podcast, Zach. I asked you here to fix my team.
but in that type of league where you've got so many people who are actually putting out content or talking about players, I'm listening to them and saying, okay, what do they want?
Sounds like a lot of work.
I know. But that's literally like, and that's why I've only got 6 leagues and most of them are with a bunch of the same players because I enjoy the people in them but I also know the people in them. And I know that I can go to, like, I just made a trade with Joe, FF Trader Joe. And I know that I can go make a trade with him. I know that I can go make a trade with Russ, and I know that they value different players than I do. And so that makes it a good trade partnership. And so, like, I really think that giving a blanket, that's part of what makes dynasty analysis so hard and why I kind of copped out and was like, hey, I'm going to talk about the psychology, because I think that's one of the most important things in this game is you're actually playing the people. Like,
here's the problem, and also something you're pointing out that I'm like, I don't want to accept that, but I'm going to have to. There is no... I love heuristics. I love simplifying things into extremes, trying to swim upstream. All this sounds great, and that tends to be my mentality and what I'm trying to do. But in reality, there is no here's 5 players you need to trade for list, especially in an individual league. There is no simplified... Right. And the simple answer is, I don't want to put in the work. I want something simple. So I'm like, okay, I'll just go to do this one simple thing. Like, I'll swim upstream and trade for single value assets. And that will be my cure-all. When really the answer is, there is no answer. I'm going to have to talk to this guy and this girl. And I'm going to have to get in the league chat. And then I'm going to have to go look at their history. And I'm going to have to go look at their team. It's the real answer is, it's more work than most of us want to invest. And so we're all looking for someone to give us one simple, just trade for this one player.
And that's why the people who are successful in the industry are not the people that you want to listen to. It's why we bring up Bosch, and it's why we bring up you, and it's why we bring up Russ, and it's why we bring up the people who haven't quote unquote made it in the industry, because the people who have made it in the industry are giving you a cure-all that doesn't actually fucking work. And
some of my favorite podcasts, you finish listening to them and you're like, this, why haven't I been winning? This is going to be so much fun. I'm going to do these three things. And I'm
yeah, but it doesn't
the
work.
Greatest. And then 2 years later, you're like, what did I misunderstand?
The best advice, the best advice I ever have received in Dynasty, and it is a pain in the ass to do. It's a pain in the ass to keep up. But I have Louis Pasiga. Leo Pasiga, not Louis. Leo. Leo Pasiga.
Great guy.
Brilliant. Genuinely. But talks about keeping notebooks on the people in your league.
Yeah, I know. I've been avoiding his content forever because I know. But it sounds like so much work, Zach.
But it's brilliant. And you can go back and look. Like, I can go back and look and say, okay, you know, this person is, you know, rookie fever, and if 2 weeks before the draft, I can sit there and go, all right, here, take this and this and this and go, or, you know, or whatever it is. So, like, if you were keeping a note on me, you would never send me a trade with a second round pick in it, because I look at that second round pick and that is a zero. I don't want it. Like, I don't want it because, like, I'm not confident enough in making a second round pick until I'm there and I see who's there. And if I want one, I'll trade for it. But people do that. And I'm just like, nah, that's a reject. And it's not like, it may not have been a bad trade. It may not have been bad value, but whatever Dynasty Trade Calculator says about a second round pick, it is however many points that they put in there too high. In my book, until I'm on the clock and or there's a player there in the second round that I want, and then I'm apt to go, hey, I'll give you next year's second and a third. And people will say, oh, well, I get a second and a third for this second. And they give it to me and I get the player that I want. But like up until that point, I don't care about a second until Rondell Moore's on the clock or until Bryan Edwards is on the clock. Like I don't give a shit about that pick until it's there. But there are people who do. There are people who a second round pick, they're like, oh yeah, second round pick. But you have to know.
And yeah, I'm so one of those people. I will always trade for a second round pick in advance. Yeah. I find most people give them away.
And then
you're on the clock and someone called Zach Rad offers you a first for your second round pick.
Yeah, yeah, he did, and you declined it.
And I declined it real hard. Real hard. sorry, Aaron.
Find a better way of saying that. Yeah, it's true. Like, one way of seeing my fantasy journey is me literally learning statistics, Excel, starting to learn R, make projections, and understand the very basic understanding of statistical analysis, just to avoid learning about my league mates. It's true. Like a procrastinator me will do all of that before we do the one thing we don't want to do. So I don't want to go back to the transaction history. I don't want to do it.
You know how I talk about how bad I am at trades? It's because there is one facet of trades that absolutely sucks, and that is the fact that you have to deal with people to do it.
Can't we just be stats? Can't we just be like nameless nameless teams that we send random offers to?
I have the 13th most points scored against me in the entire Scott Fishbowl. Out of the 1,900 teams, there are only 12 teams that have had more points scored against them. And out of the possible points, I have only left 100 points on the board in 6 weeks.
That's true. Speaking of which, how is Antonio Gibson doing?
He's doing well ish.
Yeah, he looks good.
Yeah.
He looks about what I expected. About the same Sherry. He's I've got him as running back 16, but I still don't have Monday night stats, so that could be wrong. That's season long 4 points. Points per game, he's like 20th, I think.
Because I think he had a pretty good game. Yeah, I got him at 16.
All right.
13 and a half points a game.
He's a new Kerryon Johnson, man. He's good, but everyone expects him so much.
I mean, J.D. McKissic is running back 23 in the same backfield. Love it.
Who are the rookies that are standing out? You said Jalen Waddle, but is there anyone else that's really sticking out that you didn't expect as much or you expected more? Elijah Moore is someone that's already feeling like a big letdown for me.
Yeah, but I don't think that's his fault. Like, I'm not to be like make excuses, but the Jets re-signing Jamison Crowder is just weird.
It's just Jamison Crowder walked right in and just thank you. You know what I mean?
But like, I mean, look,
James Elijah Moore is doing okay in getting volume, and I'd be okay with that, even the underperformance on that volume. But then, like, yeah, the Jets were like, "Oh, just go get Jamison Crowder again." It doesn't feel good.
No, but the other part is, I'm pretty sure that Zach Wilson has more completions to other teams than he does to any player on his own roster. Like he's thrown 9 interceptions already this year.
Is he
which
not,
is a lot.
This is a weird question. But is he not good or is this?
I didn't think he was good to begin with.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
No. So he was the like the fifth of 5 quarterbacks for me. And
but he was in so many memes. How could he not be good?
I mean, I made the one of him with the school picture background behind him. But yeah. No, so like what I said about Zach Wilson was, although his style draws comparisons to Mahomes and Favre, his gunslinging gets Wilson into trouble. He got away with a lot of bad throws into traffic, usually several per game. And at the next level, corners aren't going to drop easy picks. The biggest knock aside from swashbuckling into traffic is that Wilson always seems to be a half beat off from his receiver's timing. The ball gets there. It's catchable, but it's never quite in stride. And so Wilson creates very few opportunities for guys to create after the catch. So if you're talking a guy like, I mean, any of their receivers, Moore, Crowder, or Corey Davis.
Corey Davis, like, dude.
So much of what they do is after the catch is making plays. Zach Wilson sucks at that. And so it's really hard to have receivers who they're best. He would be best suited with a player like Mike Evans.
Right.
Who has FAC, the fall after catch. Like he's not going to get anything else. It's throw the ball up, and it would have been great if Galladay got there.
Speaking of weird corollary here, I think he's doing a little better at that for the first time this year. Now he's got Tom Brady. That might be something to say about the quality of quarterback. Yeah.
And he did the same thing when Fitzpatrick was there and was a more accurate thrower than Winston. Yeah, I think quarterback matters to players, and it's symbiotic.
It does.
Like
I will say he's getting 10 through 4 games. He's got 10% of the expected points of the team. I mean, there's reason to be hopeful. I'm not out on Elijah Moore after 5-6 regular season games.
No, I think he's good, and I think he'll be a guy you can buy after the season with all of your shitty second round picks.
I just traded him away in that league. I'm pushing. I traded him and a first away to get. Who did I get with that? I think I got Noah Fant, which sounds like a really bad trade. But again, I'm just trying to boost my overall scoring. And also, Noah Fant's young. He now feels like different Mike Gesicki at this point. and Mike Gesicki's probably a little more recognized for what he's doing this year. So I was like, I'll go get Fant instead.
Noah Fant's got that Kyle Pitts profile, you know.
There you go.
Oh, shit, the Red
Sox. There
are
some names. Dimey Brown not doing as much as I hoped, especially given the draft capital, but I'm still not out, but I'm concerned. Terrace Marshall, and Elijah Moore all looking concerning to me. The two that I like pre-draft, obviously, I'm still keeping hope for. After that, it's Amon-Ra, Rondell, Devontae Smith, Waddle, Chase, who look good so far. Kadarius Toney's in that category. I'm still out because I tend to stick with rookie evals, and
yeah,
it's all athletics as far as I can tell, which is not nothing, but I don't know how to make of it.
So he is tough because I do not trust the coaching staff in New York. And he is a player that is going to have to rely on the coaching staff to get. I mean, it's the same idea as the kid in Jacksonville, Chenault. It's the same idea as Laviska Chenault, where, like, if you can scheme Chenault the ball, he is very big and very fast and very physical and pretty good. Kadarius Toney is a little bit different, where he is, like, quick and shifty and that, but he still needs to be schemed the ball because he's not a player who is going to go out and run traditional routes and be successful. So Jason Garrett, do you trust Jason Garrett to, you know, draw up plays consistently for somebody when he couldn't do it for, you know, anybody like Amari Cooper and that, like, no, I don't trust him.
I don't think anyone does.
It's funny because everyone was victory lapping the Kadarius Toney thing because he had one good week where he had 10 targets. And yeah, but everybody on the team got hurt that week. Literally everybody. Like, there was nobody. It was Kadarius Toney and the ball boy were running routes, and that was it. And people are victory lapping, and they're like, see, Kadarius Toney's great. And they're like, nobody was saying Kadarius Toney was terrible. Kadarius Toney was a terrible first-round pick.
It's a different thing.
Yeah, you took Kadarius Toney over, like, everybody. Like, what are you doing?
Okay. Is there anyone sticking out that you might think, you know, we won't obviously know about? I mean, a wide receiver, it's a little too early. Anthony Swartz was looking half decent to start the season out with, but you're not expecting much from that draft capital. It's all that kind of nice.
Yeah, no, like this. I mean, this class, we kind of, like, you looked at it, and it was kind of what I said, where, like, everybody had kind of pumped it up, and I'm like, look, it's not as good as everybody said. Like, there are a couple of running backs that are pretty good. There are seven receivers that I think were kind of head and shoulders above everything else. And then it was just kind of a amalgamation of, like, maybe, but probably not. And I think we're still there.
I have to go check my rookie ranks. I can't remember where I had Devontae Smith, but I know I liked him a lot. I like him even more now. I think that might be underrated, where Chase is doing everything he's done and the Eagles suck. And still somehow
Devontae Smith has been fantastic.
I think I loved Elijah and Rondell Moore, and I'm wondering if I had them above Smith because I like them so much. But he jumped some for now.
I had those three in a tier: Bateman, Moore, De'Ami Brown, and Jaylen Waddle, and then everybody else was just kind of like,
Where are you at with him now?
Like, I mean,
what
it's
would
pretty
be the new ranking.
Pretty James? Much. I mean, like, obviously Chase would be one because he's been fantastic. I think probably Smith, Rondell Moore, but again, that's still a tier for me. I think Rondell Moore has been we would be talking about Rondell Moore in the same vein as Ja'Marr Chase if he is 18 inches away from having three more touchdowns.
Yeah, I get it. I am not down. I haven't gone lower on Rondell Moore. I'm really impressed with Smith so far.
Yeah,
Bateman, Moore, Smith, then Rondell Moore. And I spent last month of the offseason talking about how five was too low for Rondell Moore. And it still feels too low. But yeah, that was good.
But it was like, this is a really good top end of that class. Like,
is there anything else you want to talk about at all? I mean, well, I'm still recording, so I'm going to turn that bit off.
No, we hit like everything. If people if people listen to this,
they're good.
Like, and don't win their league now. I can't help you. I can't help you.
Surprise. All right, Zach, thanks very much for coming on the Crossroads again. I forgot we were doing the podcast. To be honest with you. I can't remember what I was going to. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks very much. And thanks everyone else for listening.
Yeah.
Chicken or crow, chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, no. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, they got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfolds, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the plays, though. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.